Mission number 12246, Lieutenant Colonel W. Waitman, Reel 4.
Colonel W.A. Waitman, Reel 4. Could you take me through a typical day in your training school, Colonel?
Certainly. Between 0500 and 0530, the bearer would come either with a hurricane lamp or torchlight and bring each cadet his chota hosiery, which I mentioned earlier. We would then wash and shave, get at a PT kit, and fall in on the company parade ground. It was nippy in winter, in the early morning, so we'd have a pullover on top of our PT kit, but on falling in and facing south, one got a very good view of the stars in the heavens. And to the north, one could see the Great Bear or the Plough, and in the south, one could see the Southern Cross, which forms part of the Australian national flag. We'd then march up to the PT training area, which was very large, leave our pullovers in platoon dumps, and then get cracking on 45 minutes PT, limbering up arms, legs and body initially, and then rope climbing and finishing up towards the end of the 45-minute period with one, if not two, runs over the assault course, which was very, very challenging and very, very enjoyable. We'd then put our pullovers back on again and double back down to the lines and get into our khaki drill. We would wear normal British Army boots, stockings, socks, hose tops and gaiters, British Army gaiters, over the top of the boot of the hose tops. And in our hose tops, we wore a green and red garter, which was the standard hose top garter for the Officers Training School at Bangalore. KD shorts, KD shirt, our pith helmet, and our web belt. We'd then go on to foot drill. For arms drill, we generally wore the leather belt and the leather bayonet frog. Arms put away, we'd go to breakfast. Now, at Bangalore, where there were some 2,000 cadets, each cadet was issued with a bicycle because it was such a large training school and large training area adjoining of Agram Plain that in order to save time between periods, one cycled everywhere in pairs, and there was a specific mounting and dismounting drill, and then each pair of cadets locked the bicycles together in a straight line, whether it was outside the mess or outside a classroom or adjacent to a training area. The breakfast over, the next period would probably be Urdu, and Urdu was the standard language of the Indian Army, mainly based upon Hindustani. This was a standardized language so that all ranks, all castes, all tribes, all people within the army had a standard language. Each group of three cadets had a teacher, which in Urdu is a munshi. And one would report to one's munshi, would be sitting on a chair on the veranda of one of the company offices or mess buildings, and the three cadets would sit on the bench. And our own munshi myself and two other cadets would be greeted by the words, "Salaam Saab," to which we replied, "Salaam Saab." Then it was standard procedure to ask you a series of questions. "Apka Munshi, Kia Hai?" Who is your Munshi? "Meara Munshi Saab Karnam A.M. Isaac Hai." My Munshi is Mr. A.M. Isaac. "Apka Number Kia Hai?" What is your number? "Meara Number Dohazar Dosau Satarwe Hai." That was my personal number at the officers' training school, 2297. One would then work progressively through the relevant chapter or section of the elementary Urdu book. After 5 months training with the Munshi, one was expected to sit a written exam and pass an oral test. This was a prerequisite to passing out from the OTS, whether you were going into the British Army or the Indian Army.
And if you failed that test, you would fail your course, is that correct?
You could be recoursed or given a warning that you may fail the whole course and be back squadded to a company 2 months behind you. But invariably, people pass the hurdle at the second attempt. Naturally, some of the older officer cadets who had been NCOs and warrant officers in the British Army sometimes found it hard to get their brain back into gear and do the mental gymnastics necessary to learn a foreign language. But I found that language very, very useful indeed in India, in Burma, in Malaya. Not that I was very good with verbs and grammar, but at least I could understand what a person was saying to me, and they could understand what I was trying to convey. I also found it extremely useful some 30 years later when I went to the Arabian Gulf. Other training periods, we would do tactics, section formations, section battle drills, platoon formations, platoon battle drills on Agram Plain, fieldcraft on Agram Plain, weapon training on the number one rifle, short muzzle Enfield rifle, and the Bren light machine gun in the weapon training area of the OTS. As I said earlier, this was commanded by Major Adams of the Royal Ulster Rifles. The senior sergeant major instructor was CMSI Mounter of the Somerset Light Infantry, and our own personal squad instructor, we're always squatted in groups of six, never more than eight, was Staff Sergeant Instructor Page of the Green Howards. In addition, we had periods of military law and also lectures on man management. And in the anterooms of our respective company messes were illustrated scrolls containing the dictums of Field Marshal Lord Chetwood, ending with the exhortation that the welfare and safety of our men was to come first, foremost, and every time. In addition, we went on long route marches of 10 to 15 miles in the surrounding countryside. So we saw the Indian farmers at work in South India, and some routes took us through the suburbs of Bangalore, such as Richmond Town, and we passed to the southeast the huge Hindustan aircraft factory, which had been built under American auspices.
What were you carrying in the way of equipment and weight on these route marches?
Belt, pouches, bayonet, rifle, and small haversack and water bottle. After 8 weeks in preliminary company, those that weren't relegated or who had not made the grade and had been either sent to the British Base Reinforcement Camp at Dullahy as private soldiers or transferred into the Indian Army Corps of Clerks. We then commenced a further 2 months training in what was called Pre-Officers Training School Company under Major Proctor of the Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers. In this company, pre-OTS, our platoon was commanded by Staff Sergeant Instructor Bill Barracliffe of the East Yorkshire Regiment. And we continued with another first 2 months, first class, hard, challenging training. The Indian Prince decided to bail out voluntarily after the 2 months in preliminary company, and he appeared in Bangalore in the uniform of his father's state force, and of course was allowed into the Funnels Hotel and Bar, which was for officers only. We cadets were always excluded from there, not that many of us would perhaps want to go in.
Was there a caste system in the sense of officers and ranks and gradings of officers within the Indian Army?
Yes, the junior ranks started at sepoy, the Indian word for which is sipahi, but in the infantry they were always known as jawans, young soldiers. Then the lance corporal was a lance naik, the full corporal was a naik, N-A-I-K, the sergeant was a havildar, then the sergeant major was a havildar major. The Viceroy's commissioned officer structure then came in, and the equivalent of a second lieutenant Viceroy's commissioned officer who wore small silver star or pip on a strip of two red and one central yellow stripe ribbon was the Jemadar. The two pips was the Subedar, and the three pips was the Subedar Major. And he, in fact, was the senior Indian Viceroy Commissioned Officer within an infantry battalion. Thereafter, the normal British rank structure of Second Lieutenant, Lieutenant Captain Major, Lieutenant Colonel.
And were the Indian units officered by purely British officers?
Mixed, British and Indian. And whilst the Gurkha regiments, of which there were 10 at that time, with several battalions in each of the 10 regiments, each with their own regimental training centre in northern India, the other regiments, particularly the Punjab regiments, were mixed with Punjabi Musulmans, Sikhs, Rajputs and the like. Maratha light infantry were mainly recruited from Marathas. The Rajputs, 7th Rajput Regiment, were, as one would expect, Rajputs. The 11th Sikh Regiment, largely Sikhs. But integration was practiced wherever possible and worked well.
Was there a traditional hierarchy of senior regiments as there was in the British Army?
Yes. And from memory, the seniority of the infantry regiments was as follows. The 1st Punjab Regiment, the 2nd Punjab Regiment. Field Marshal Claude Auchinleck was distinguished officer of the 1st Punjab Regiment. 2nd Punjab Regiment, the 3rd Madras Regiment from South India, the 4th Bombay Grenadiers, now renamed Indian Grenadiers, the 5th Maratha Light Infantry, the 6th Rajputana Rifles, the 7th Rajput Regiment, the 8th Punjab Regiment, the 9th Baluch Regiment, which, although named Baluch Regiment, was largely Punjabi Musulman with some Pathans. The 11th Sikh Regiment, the 12th Frontier Force Regiment, the 13th Frontier Force Rifles, the 14th Punjab Regiment, the 15th Punjab Regiment, the 16th Punjab Regiment, and thereafter there would be the Kamaun Regiment and the Assam Regiment and the Burma Regiment. In the cavalry, again, there was a seniority list, and the first most senior cavalry regiment was Skinner's Horse, which originally been one of the Bengal Lancer regiments.
At this stage, had you any opinion of, had you been told anything about the quality of the Indian soldier?
That they were largely recruited annually by regimental recruiting teams, sometimes accompanied by a band, marching through the towns and villages of the area from which respective regiments were recruited. And thereafter, a very strict screening process was applied, as only physically fit and able-bodied chaps were accepted as recruits at the regiment for recruit training at each regiment's training centres. For instance, in Bengal, no recruiting was done because the people were not of a military class or caste. The artisans of the Indian Army were mainly from South India, and they were formed into the Madras Sappers and Rifles and the Royal Indian Engineers. Also, transport-wise, there was the Royal Indian Army Service Corps, and supply-wise, the Royal Indian Army Ordnance Corps, all part of that magnificent army of 2 million volunteers. Regimental training centres, which I can recall, the 9th Gurkha Rifles had their regimental training centre at Dehradun, and they were the 1st Gurkha Rifles training centre was at Dharamsala. The Corps of Military Police India at Faizabad, and the garrison towns of the Punjab would all contain an individual regiment's own training centre, rather like the spiritual home of regiments in England, such as Richmond of the Green Howards, York for the West Yorkshires, Beverley for the East Yorkshires.
Was there a distinctive pride between being in the Indian Army and being in the British Army out in India?
The Indian Army had its own particular pride in that we were 2 million volunteers, and the British Army in India, again, whether cavalry, now armoured, or infantry, all preserved their own regimental pride and traditions. And many had distinguished records in India, particularly on the northwest frontier, over 2 centuries, going back to the Indian Mutiny of 1858-1859. The Dharamite, in particular, had a distinguished record in India for polo, led by the legendary Captain Beauvoir de Lisle, and also at soccer, of which they were renowned pre-World War II.
And finally, on this particular topic, Colonel, the ordinary British soldier, what was his regard for the ordinary Indian soldier?
A healthy respect regarding him as a brother in arms. And the British soldier, particularly the chap who enlisted pre-war, in the time of the Depression, enjoyed a higher standard of living in India and elsewhere within the empire than he would back home, because whilst his pay was not that of a modern city yuppie by any means, it went a great deal further in terms of rupees and annas and he could, several of them could chip in together and pay an Indian orderly to do their kit for them. So whilst not fabulously well off, they did enjoy a better standard of living in the British Army in India than perhaps they might have done in married quarters in Aldershot or some Colchester or some other garrison town in the home country.
To come back to your training now, you've moved into another a higher rate of training. Where was this taking you? Are you getting close to your posting?
No, we had another 5 months to go. And we moved into senior school, D Company.
About what date would this be?
February 1944, we moved into D Company of the senior school. And D Company was commanded by Major David Baxter of the 8th Punjab, son of Colonel Baxter, who had interviewed me initially at York for the Indian Army in the summer of 1942. A company of D Company that passed out ahead of us had one interesting cadet who went into either the Royal Indian Army Ordnance Corps or the Royal Army Ordnance Corps, and that was Tom Jenkins, the famous violinist who later followed Albert Sandler on Palm Court on the BBC on Sunday evenings, and I can remember him playing at one or two mess functions. The training then moved from platoon level to company level and was still of the same challenging intensity and the same 6-day period, but 3 afternoons off for sport, hockey, tennis, cricket and the like, and interspersed with frequent cross-country running. A great deal of importance was attached to sport, and I'm pleased to say that during our 5 months in the senior school, D Company won the Wavell Banner, which was for the top sporting company.
As part of your training, were you being given command of troops or command of fellow cadets as a leader?
Only command of other cadets. As section commander, section 2IC, and the later platoon commander, platoon sergeant, and all infantry roles. Number 1 on the Bren, number 2 on the Bren, member of the rifle group. Permanently, for the 5 months, an ex-British Army warrant officers and senior NCOs were given platoon positions, and we had, as platoon sergeant, Officer Cadet Goldstone, who'd been in the Cameron Highlanders, and Officer Eek, he was the platoon, Bernard Goldstone was the platoon sergeant, and Officer Cadet Eek was the platoon corporal.
And these were promotions you were given within your
within the training course.
Within the training course.
They were Officer Cadets, but they acted as platoon sergeant and platoon corporal, respectively. And there are, from memory, I think there were about 8 or 10 platoons in our company. It was a very large company indeed.
Were you getting any opportunities for leave?
We had a break of 1 week between the 7th and 8th month, but majority of cadets stayed within the OTS for that leave and merely went downtown for a game of cricket at the Gymkhana Club or a good meal at a Chinese restaurant or the Lakeview Milk Bar and Bunny's, where one got a very good steak, egg and chips. On Sundays I attended worship at the American Methodist Church at Richmond Town, which was run by an American Methodist, the Reverend G.P. Tasker. And I sometimes attended East Parade Methodist Church. It was a very nice, cool, tall building on East Parade. The resident Methodist minister was the Reverend Hopkins, and a very good Anglo-Indian friendly spirit existed both at the American Methodist Church in Richmond Town, with some pretty girls from the Baldwin Girls High School attending evening worship, and at the East Parade Methodist Church. We had church parade for the OTS, most of the companies parading, and they would come up probably about every 2 months at the East Parade Garrison Church, which was Anglican, and another very impressive, cool, colonial-type building.
Was your religion a help to you in what was to come in your battle experience?
To some extent, I would think so. But on the other hand, when we were to get into close combat, you're thinking more of your weapon and your tactics than one's religion, whether it is RC, C of E, Parsi, or whatever. But in the still watches of the light of the night, when one could hear firing going on elsewhere or close at hand, one certainly gave one's religious background and hopes and fears a considerable amount of thought, rather like the man in the condemned cell. It certainly musters your thoughts. And it is a funny freak of psychological reaction at night that when occasionally when one is on sentry duty, and I did my two-on, two-off. The two-on-four-off was a thing of the past. We were so short of men, it was a case of two-on, two-off. I always did my stint in a front foxhole with my men in Burma throughout the 10 months we were there. And it is a psychological reaction that occasionally one thinks that the whole Jap army is after you individually. I never asked anyone of an explanation of this, but I think it's a human reaction.
Coming back to your training school again, were you able at the end of your day, your training day, to free to go into town?
Yes, on one's bike. And my main ports of call, I was completely teetotal in those days. Would be the Lakeview Milk Bar or Bunny's or a Chinese restaurant where you've got very good meals indeed. Occasionally we're invited out by local residents. The Reverend Hopkins invited me for dinner once or twice, the Reverend Tasker for lunch one Sunday, and his wife, very somewhat older but very good, practical Methodists from the USA. And we were friendly with the a few Anglo-Indian families.
Was there a scarcity of young ladies? Young, healthy men?
There were one or two local glamour girls, but they were mainly collared by the RAF from what we could see in passing taxis. But there were a few young ladies who one met in passing, although we never actually had mess functions. But a family at Richmond Town always made me welcome, and I still have the permanent addresses of the two daughters of this household, one settled in the UK and one settled in Australia, and is extremely well. Both now have grown-up families.
What was your pay?
As private, it was the British Army basic rate of pay, which was something like 8 or 10 shillings per week. And in India, we got the equivalent in rupees. But when commissioned as a second lieutenant, my pay would be about 10 shillings a day. And then I can recall after the war in 1947 precisely what it was. As a lieutenant, it was 15 shillings a day and one got a 2 shilling increment per annum. So later, 3 years later, I was on 19 shillings a day as a lieutenant with 2 years seniority and 2 and 6 pence, half a crown as it was known, in the old currency, parishute pay. The princely sum of 19 and 6 a day. I'll come back to that at a later part.
Was it sufficient for your needs at this time?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I saved on it. And then when one passed the elementary Urdu exam, one got an award of 100 rupees, which was a king's ransom to us as officer cadets.
You've mentioned examinations there, educational examinations and so on. What were you taking? What were you having to be prepared for?
The Urdu written exam and oral exam. For the oral exam, you were examined by an Indian Army Indian officer and you conversed with a Jawan, a private soldier or a junior NCO, a Jawan from the 15th Punjab Regiment, which is the 15th Battalion of the 15th Punjab Regiment, who provided a demonstration company at the OTS Bangalore.